The following program, The Russ Belville Show, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate to the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate any illegal activity and encourage all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers on The Russ Belville Show are their own, and The Russ Belville Show cannot be held legally responsible for their validity or reliability. Viewer discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it,
and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization. Of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Yeah, I hear you had a question for me.
Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
Right, good day, tokers and tokettes, and welcome. It is Thursday, January 24th, 2013, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Welcome to the show. So glad you could be here. My last week of being 44 years old. Aw, poor me. Getting older and older just like everyone else, except those of you who died just now. Anyway, we are having a good time, maybe too good of a time here at Rolla J Studios today, partially because I am so excited to see Patrick J. Kennedy making the media rounds at MSNBC and Fox and all of these different channels, pimping the Project Sam, the Smart Approaches to Marijuana. As you know, I've been leading a satire campaign called Project Samuel. You can find it at smartapproaches.com, and having a lot of fun with that. We'll talk a little bit about that in hour two, but also we've got some amazing video for you tonight in the Radical Rant. Last night on my local news right here in Portland, Oregon, they featured a story of Jeremy Eccles, a man who is giving medical marijuana treatments to his son Alex, who suffers from a severe autism rage. You may remember, those of you who followed my previous incarnations, me interviewing different people, Marie Myung Ok and also Miko Hester Perez, who had also given their kids with autism some medical marijuana. The video from this presentation probably changed more minds than all the ranting I could possibly do. So we're going to show you that in the Radical Rant today. At half past, it's time for cops to say legalize drugs. And joining us today, Michael Sindrich from Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. He is a former prosecutor in San Diego. He'll be here to talk about why we need to legalize drugs, no matter what Project Sam says. Then we've also got at our 20 after, we've got our Daily Toker Tunes for Groovin' Thursday. We're going to go behind the headlines as well today with Sunil Agarwal, who's one of our colleagues, a great guy who follows the show, who called out the governor of New York, Andrew Cuomo, in the Huffington Post today, calling out a very illogical stand by the governor. So we'll get to that. Plus, we've got a whole bunch of headlines to cover. We'll get to those right after this first break right here on 420radio.org, your 24-hour community radio station for all of us who believe marijuana should be legalized. You don't have to smoke it. It might help. But you don't have to smoke it to support the show. Get involved at 420radio.org and check out my blog at radicalrust.com. We're going to take a little break. When we come back, we've got the 420 Radio News.
We'll be right back after these messages from our 420 friendly sponsors. Support these advertisers because their ad money goes straight to the Russ Belville Show. You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Cast your eyes up to the skies. What is it to live and die?
K
California is the center of marijuana consciousness. That's why High Times Magazine is returning to the Golden State for our second High Times Medical Cannabis Cup in Los Angeles. That's right. Come to LA Center Studios on February 16th and 17th for this high-flying event. Meet the medical cannabis industry, visit our extra special medicating area, and sample the best cannabis products of Southern California. There'll be cultivation seminars and presentations about getting pot legalized, not just in California, but everywhere. Be there on Saturday evening when we host a Rock'em Sock'em concert with surprise musical guests. And don't forget Sunday night and the High Times Medical Cannabis Cup Awards when we honor the best sativa, best indica, best hybrid, best concentrate, and best edibles of the LA medical cannabis scene. Plus, we present the High Times Lifetime Achievement Award to marijuana superstar Tommy Chong. Come to the City of the Angels on February 16th and 17th for a High Times Cannabis Celebration. Go to MedCanCup.com for details. Live the high life. Be proud of who you are. Be part of the growing cannabis community. The March issue of High Times Magazine is here, just in time for playoff season in the National Football League. But did you know that NFL players who use pot receive the toughest penalties in sport? In our March 2013 issue, High Times investigates the NFL's wrong-headed policies and examines how pot can help athletes off the field. We also tee up an outstanding profile of one of the world's greatest strains with the haze craze. Senior cultivation editor Danny Danko weighs in on the origins of this outstanding sativa. And editorial director Dan Skye takes a high-minded look at the outdoor harvest of 2012. Growers are getting higher prices for the product and strains are better than ever. Plus, we'll take you inside of one of the most unique gardens you'll ever see, a state-of-the-art underground bunker that allows growers to create the perfect environment for pot. Also in this issue, Saturday Night Live's Jason Sudeikis drops by to talk about his new film, Movie 43. And guess what? Jason likes pot. Plus, we cover the most important story of the year. Pot is legal in Colorado and Washington. Pick up the March issue of High Times Magazine for the very best marijuana coverage on the planet. Be part of the growing cannabis community. On newsstands now.
Now it's time for your 420 Radio News for Thursday, January 24th, 2013. I'm Russ Belville. Politicians call for lab worker drug tests. This from the BostonHerald.com. A top GOP lawmaker wants to require chemists at the state's scandal-ravaged drug labs to undergo random drug testing after the arrest of a second lab scientist accused of evidence tampering. Biochemist Sonia Farak, age 35's arrest, comes in the wake of the September arrest of Annie Dukin, who authorities said tampered with drug evidence. Farak pleaded not guilty in Eastern Hampshire District Court to charges she broke open two evidence samples she'd certified were cocaine on January 2nd and 8th and replaced them with counterfeit substances, even as she was testifying as an expert witness in other criminal cases. Court documents released yesterday indicate this may not have been an isolated incident of suspected theft. Authorities also found two empty envelopes that had contained suspected drug evidence in Farak's work areas at the lab. The drugs have not yet been located, according to state police documents. In addition, a search warrant executed Saturday on her 2002 Volkswagen Golf yielded cocaine and heroin and several clear packets from the lab that had been opened and were empty, court documents state. Lawsuit seeks faster track for New Jersey medical marijuana program from Philly.com. Lawyers for two South Jersey medical marijuana patients are expected to ask a Superior Court judge Thursday to order sweeping changes to make the drug more accessible to those in pain. 3 years since New Jersey's Medical Marijuana Act became law, only one of a half dozen planned dispensaries has opened, and 199 doctors statewide can certify patients to buy the drug. In their petition, attorneys William H. Buckman of Morristown and Ann E. Davis of Brick also asked the court to make it easier for doctors to register in the program and for regulations limiting the strength of the drug to be lifted. The lawsuit, filed in April and amended in October, names the department, Health Commissioner Mary O'Dowd, and Program Director John H. O'Brien Jr., and alleges, quote, egregious, arbitrary, and capricious conduct, end quote, in implementing the program. Glock was terminally ill when she became a plaintiff in this lawsuit. She died in the fall before she could obtain medical marijuana. Record marijuana bust, 7 tons of pot seized at the Arizona border, from the Los Angeles Times. Border officials have made what is believed to be the largest marijuana seizure in history at an Arizona border crossing. Agents at the U.S.-Mexico border in Nogales confiscated 7 tons of marijuana this month, U.S. Customs and Border Protection officers reported Wednesday. The marijuana is worth as much as $12 million, authorities said. The January 15th seizure took place after agents at the Mariposa cargo facility in Nogales, Arizona, singled out for inspection a 26-year-old man from Nogales, Mexico, and the tractor trailer he was driving. Inside the trailer, officials said they found 600 bales of marijuana weighing 14,151 pounds. Previously, the largest drug seizure had occurred in June 2010 at the same port of entry when agents confiscated 12,000 pounds of marijuana. Marijuana Forum tonight in Seattle from the Seattle Times. The State Liquor Control Board holds the second of a series of forums on legal marijuana sales Thursday night at Seattle City Hall. Hundreds of people attended the first forum Tuesday night in Olympia. Many said they wanted licenses to grow, process, or sell marijuana in what they called a new cottage industry in the state. Many also said people convicted of marijuana crimes shouldn't be disqualified. Liquor Board is drafting rules to implement Initiative 502, which was approved in November by voters. It legalizes the possession of up to an ounce of marijuana and calls for state-licensed marijuana growers, processors, and retail stores. More public forums are scheduled February 7th in Vancouver, the 12th in Spokane, the 19th in Mount Vernon, and the 21st in Yakima. ABC News notes the catch-22, keeping marijuana labeled a dangerous drug. Lots of quotes from Tamar Todd, senior staff attorney for Drug Policy Alliance. And they are recognizing that the DEA will not allow the studies that they say we need to reschedule marijuana. That's your 420 Radio News for Thursday, January 24th, 2013. I'm Russ Belville. When we come back, we go behind the headlines with Sunil Agarwal's piece calling out Governor Andrew Cuomo of New York. Plus, a stunning admission from Patrick J. Kennedy of Project Sam. You're listening to The Russ Belville Show on 420radio.org. We'll be right back. The law offices of Omar Figueroa would like to remind you to stand up for your rights. Please do not give up your precious liberties. There's nothing wrong with standing up for our constitutional rights, and in fact, it's the only way to honor the Constitution that recognizes our natural rights. Treat law enforcement with respect and respect the Constitution by standing up for your rights. If you are detained or arrested, stand up for your rights by repeating, "I respectfully invoke all my legal and constitutional rights. I do not consent to any search and seizure. I want to remain silent, and I want to speak to my attorney, Omar Figueroa." Omar Figueroa has more than a decade of experience in federal and California courts and graduated from Yale University, Stanford Law School, and Trial Lawyers College. Please contact the law offices of Omar Figueroa at 415-489-0420 or 707-829-0215. Or on the web at www.omarfigueroa.com.
I'm Sub Cool from Team Green Avenger. At TGAGenetics.com, we are working on the leading edge of medical strains. Our strains are rigorously tested for THC, CBD, THCV, and other critical cannabinoids.
Meanwhile,
know your grow. Check out our genetic diversity at TGAGenetics.com, the home of Jelly Bean, Jack the Ripper, Vortex, and other award-winning cannabis strains.
All right, welcome back. Time for us to go behind the headlines. We're going to be taking a look here at a piece written by Sunil Agarwal, who is one of our friends of the show. He's practicing medicine and teaching, he's a researcher, on cannabinoids and medical health. So, I wanted to just read a little bit from his piece on Governor Cuomo, because it's quite interesting. In the 2013 State of the State address, Governor Cuomo said, "There are roughly 50,000 arrests in New York City for marijuana possession every year. Of those 50,000 arrests, 82% are black and Hispanic. These arrests stigmatize, they criminalize, they create a permanent record. It's not fair. It's not right. It must end, and it must end now. Stop stigmatizing these young people, making it harder to find a job, making it harder to get into school, making it harder to turn their lives around. Okay, so that's a great quote from the governor in the state of the state. And currently, if you're in New York State with, under federal law, you know, what he's disagreeing with is the federal law. With a third possession under federal law, you can get a felony, get a mandatory minimum of 90 days, a maximum of 5 years, and a $5,000 fine. For one marijuana plant, you can get up to 5 years in federal prison. So it's great that Governor Cuomo is against that, that he's saying, you know, we need to stop these arrests and so forth. However, in a press conference on April 9th, 2012, in Utica, New York, he said, and this is with respect to medical marijuana, he said, "My position has been that there are tremendous risks here also. I understand the benefits, but there are also risks, and I think the risks outweigh the benefits at this point. I understand there's more research and there's more evidence, and it can always be reevaluated." So how do you support Governor Cuomo ending the stigmatization and the arrests for marijuana possession in New York City, but then when asked about medical marijuana, you defer to the federal government? You defer to their treatment of this and what they think the risks are? Doesn't make a whole lot of sense. I mean, the federal government has been blocking this ever since, well, I mean, we go back to the Schaefer Commission report in 72. In fact, in 1988, when the DEA was sued by Normal, and the federal DEA judge, the administrative law judge, Francis Young, said it ought to be decriminalized and reschedule at least down to Schedule 2, the DEA disregarded that. They completely disregarded their own judge and all the evidence. And as governor of New York, and this is Sunil Agarwal pointing this out, the New York Department of Health conducted a large-scale taxpayer-funded cooperative clinical trial whose results were published in 1988. The New York State Department of Health report on this study concluded that approximately 93% of marijuana inhalation treatment episodes were effective or highly effective when compared to other anti-emetics. And that's, you know, something that cures nausea, right? Puking. They were testing this New York Department of Health, testing it on, you know, cancer patients, chemo, and the nausea and stuff, right? So, highly effective when compared with other anti-emetics, 93%. No serious adverse side effects were reported. No patient receiving marijuana required hospitalization or any other form of medical intervention. It is hypocritical to dissent from the federal position on marijuana criminalization and at the same time endorse their out-of-touch position on marijuana's medical utility and safety. Respectfully, Governor, what makes you think that their position on marijuana can be trusted at all? To not support medical marijuana is like saying science and compassion for patients can wait until we let the federal government sort out and acknowledge their mistakes. But the sick should not have to wait for that. To use your words, it's not fair, it's not right. It must end, and it must end now. That's Sunil Agarwal, MD, PhD, House Staff, New York University, Langone Medical Center, Department of Physical Medicine and Rehabilitation, which requires an extra long business card to put that on. Now, before we go, before we take our break, real quick, before we go to the 420, I just wanted to give you a little piece of video from Patrick J. Kennedy. You know, he's pimping the Project Sam, Smart Approaches to Marijuana Use Except Legalization. And there's a stunning bit of video here, and I'm going to play you this from the folks at Mox News picked this one up, of him on the cable news just the other day talking about whether or not we should incarcerate people for marijuana. Check it out. You'll be shocked. It's pretty darn amazing.
Access to this anyway, but we shouldn't be adding fuel to the fire. And my whole point is, let's get the public health officials in here and offer other recommendations besides, you know, incarceration, because I'm also against incarceration. Sure. So let's
for low-level dealers. I mean,
for yes. So we would have, well, you know, in here and offer other recommendations besides, you know, incarceration, because I'm also against incarceration. Sure. So let's
for low-level dealers. I mean,
for yes. So we would have incarceration, because I'm also against incarceration.
Sure.
So let's
for low level dealers. I mean, for,
yes. So we would have, you know, expungement if you go to drug court, mental health court. We want to have treatment, but
So we'll get to the rest of this when we get to the radical rant tonight, just a little bit later, actually. Coming up, actually, we'll watch the whole thing in hour two, Toker Talk Radio. There's so much to get to, it's hard for me to keep track of everything that we got to get to. But there, I'll let Patrick blather on there for just a little while longer. Yeah, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, so Patrick J. Kennedy apparently saying that low-level dealers should not be incarcerated. Low-level dealers should not be incarcerated. Keep that in mind, folks. Oh, man. I kind of like this Project Sam because at least it keeps me busy.
Those pro-business are so funny sometimes.
Stamping out their BS.
Oh, have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. Have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. If he said he swam to China, he would sell you South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
You know, I've been playing rock and roll for a lot of years, and I've done it all. Now I do it without drugs. Hey, don't get me wrong, I still party with the best of them, but now I do it clean. You know, I'm on top of everything I do.
Funky. Licious. Oh, yeah. That's right. Grooving. Keeping it mellow here at the Funky Roller Ring. So join me, Big Daddy, every Thursday night. The doors open at 11 Eastern, 8 Pacific, baby.
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah. Groove on. Groove on.
Everyone knows music and marijuana go together, so let's wind up our 20 after break with the Russ Belville Show's Daily Toker Tunes, the best in pod-safe 420 music from around the web. Today is Groovin' Thursday, featuring rap, hip-hop, soul, and funk music. You can get downloads and more information about all our Daily Toker Tunes by visiting music.radicalrust.com. Now, sit back and enjoy your Daily Toker Tunes.
All right, welcome back, everybody. What is it? 22 after the hour here at Rolla J Studios in beautiful Potland, Oregon. And I tell you, I've been busy as hell having to deal with all of this Project Sam stuff, Twitter wars with Kevin Sabet, looking up data to rebut their stupid assumptions.
This is what you live for, man.
I live for it. I've been preparing. I feel like I've been preparing all this time for a big media propaganda battle. And now I have my opponent.
It's been launched. 2013, man. It's the year of the green.
Yeah, and we're getting a lot of response on Project Samuel Facebook page, which is Smart Approaches on Facebook. The Smart Approaches on Twitter, getting some reprints. And part of it, it's really interesting because I think in a way I'm also offering a place for our community to vent. Because you cannot comment on the Project Sam page.
Yeah,
they don't. Well, you can, but they're moderated, and they're not going to let anything through that we're.
Yeah, saying, right? They're not going to let any truth through.
Right,
you know?
Right.
Of course not.
So you can go to our Project Samuel page at smartapproaches.com and leave all the comments you like. And on the Facebook, it's been interesting. I've been making a picture a day. I did a picture of that Naomi woman on the first one, and they did David Frum yesterday. Today, I did a couple pictures that you'll get to see in our radical rant today from the autism story, and. It's interesting because a whole lot of people don't realize it's satire. And they
That's
get,
the best part of
and
satire.
They get furious. And they're just typing these furious all caps, you know, you people suck. I'm having a lot of fun.
It's like, wait, have you never watched cable television?
I wonder if Stephen Colbert gets this.
Okay, if you don't know what the word satire means, it's just sarcasm.
There you go. So anyway, that's just a long way for me to say that I've been really busy, and so for today, I don't have a new Daily Toker tune. I'm so sorry. It sucks. But so I'm going to bring up the tune that sometimes takes us out to break, and a lot of people have been talking about it, and they always want to know what the name of it is, and we played it in hour two. But for those of you listening in hour one who've been wondering what that song is, here's what that song is. If you're listening on the podcast, it's the Chain Gang of 1974 with Effin' Head, the Psychedelia version, Isom Innes remix. Enjoy.
You cut people, you smoke trees till you get what you need now. Designer drugs and minted smokes to get through the day. You always get them so high.
The 26 million Americans who smoked marijuana last year, we need to get involved in the drive to legalize marijuana. We need your help to stop the senseless arrest of more than 800,000 Americans each year on marijuana charges. Together, we can end marijuana prohibition and stop the arrests of marijuana smokers. To learn what you can do to help, contact Norma at NORML.org or call toll-free 888-67-NORMA.
Yeah.
of the most disturbing elements of the Prohibition War is how it's made police the enemy of otherwise law-abiding cannabis consumers. Fortunately, one group of police officers knows the futility of Prohibition and reaches out to educate the community and current law enforcement. Today, the Russ Belville Show visits with another speaker from Law Enforcement Against Prohibition with one clear message. Cops say legalize drugs.
Welcome back, everybody. 29 after the hour, and joining us by telephone, we have Michael Sindridge from Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. Michael, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. My pleasure to be on.
Oh, so happy to have you here. And I'm reading through your bio here. It says that you were a prosecutor for the County of San Diego's District Attorney's Office. You know, we do a lot of stories here where we get them out of San Diego, and they've always had kind of a... made it a priority to go after medical marijuana and marijuana consumers down there. Did you find that in your time in San Diego, that it was very anti-marijuana?
Yeah, San Diego is an extremely anti-marijuana county. The district attorney's office here, they take these cases extremely seriously. And, you know, people who are in compliance with state law, just having your paperwork together and making every effort to comply with state law isn't enough. You can still be arrested, and the DA's office will still prosecute you.
Mm-hmm. You know, we also just did a story recently where I guess the lead on it was that San Diego was giving up on prosecuting some of these cases. Do you have any information on that or knowledge of that?
Well, you know, it was a statement from the mayor of San Diego that essentially told the city attorney, Jan Goldsmith, to cease civil prosecutions of marijuana dispensaries. So it was more on the civil side. It didn't really have anything to do with criminal prosecutions, although we haven't really seen any criminal prosecutions of dispensaries in San Diego for quite some time now.
Yeah. Okay. Also, looking from your background, I hear you see worked on a lot of cases involving DUIs, and that's been kind of, I'm up here in the Pacific Northwest in Portland and in Washington State. This has been a lot of controversy over their legalization with its per se DUID. And I'm just wondering, as someone who prosecuted these cases, did you prosecute a lot of cases of people for DUI marijuana?
You know, when I was in the DA's office, the majority of DUI prosecutions I handled were alcohol related. Although on the criminal defense side, I've handled dozens upon dozens of marijuana-related DUIs, and I can tell you it is an interesting issue, especially the states that have these per se limits. It doesn't really make much sense, especially when we're talking about the fact that someone could have consumed cannabis 20 to 30 days ago, and in many of these per se states, they'd still be liable for a DUI.
Yeah, there's, you know, zero tolerance for metabolites in places like Georgia and Utah. I believe New Approach Washington still has a fact sheet up on that if any of our listeners are interested in it. All right, so you worked for San Diego County DA's office. You were on that side of it. And then you mentioned being on the criminal defense side of it. Having that unique perspective, being on both sides, are people on the prosecution side starting to get it, that we can't continue to arrest our way out of any sort of perceived drug problem?
Yeah, I'm really seeing a shift in the attitude of many of the prosecutors in that, you know, hey, marijuana is all over the news right now. It's legal in a couple of states, 16 or 17 other states plus the District of Columbia now have medical laws. I think people are starting to understand, especially the prosecutors are starting to understand, that these aren't winning cases. These aren't winning fights for them. The general community is starting to become more accepting of marijuana as a medicine and for recreational purposes. So I think, you know, when you look at juries and how juries are going to view the amount of resources that we spend on the prosecution of marijuana cases, I think there's a lot of prosecutors out there that just don't even want to handle these cases. Unfortunately, though, they're following the orders of their supervisors and ultimately the head district attorney, Bonnie DeManis. And when they say prosecute, it's their job to prosecute, even though they may not be that wild about taking these cases forward.
Do you have any way of measuring or knowing the diversion of resources that go toward marijuana prosecution and how that might affect being able to prosecute other crimes out there?
You know, I really don't have any actual figures on what it takes to prosecute marijuana-related cases, but I can tell you that, especially in San Diego County, our courts are having to make cutbacks in budget and finances, and we just really don't have the resources to prosecute these cases. When you're sitting in the courtroom and you see people going up for marijuana-related offenses, and standing right next to them, the next case is someone that's going up for a murder, you have to start to prioritize where you want to spend your resources. And I think it's pretty clear that it's just not worth spending these resources on marijuana cases.
We're speaking with Michael Sindridge, a former prosecutor in San Diego, California, now a speaker with Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, and still doing the defense work?
Oh, absolutely. Still doing the defense work on a daily basis here in San Diego. All different types of criminal defense, but the majority of the cases I handle are marijuana-related, mostly DUI marijuanas, cultivation, possession with intent to sell, transportation, basically all the marijuana offenses that are commonly found here in San Diego court.
Okay. We've been reporting a lot on a new PR offensive by a group called Project Sam. Patrick Kennedy, Kevin Sabat are involved. And one of the things that they are advocating is that we shouldn't have so many arrests for marijuana possession. We should actually funnel people through something like a drug court system. And, of course, we've chronicled the rise of drug courts from since the 1990s to now, where there's over 2,700 of them. You keep mentioning, you know, not having enough resources or priorities for the courts now. How would they possibly put together more courts for more, you know, judicial-related sanctions for marijuana use?
Yeah, you know, I think when it comes to drug courts generally serve rehabilitative purposes. And, you know, I think if there's someone that actually has a problem with marijuana, some type of addiction to marijuana, then maybe drug court would be beneficial. But, you know, as far as drug court is concerned, I don't think marijuana users have any place in drug court when they're standing there next to addicts, you know, heroin addicts and pill addicts and crack addicts. And then you have someone that consumes marijuana. I just don't think it really makes much sense to class marijuana users, you know, in the same group as those people.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'm also wondering, you know, having worked, you know, now in the defense side of things, how do you use your knowledge of the prosecution side to help your defendants?
Yeah, anytime I'm handling a case, a criminal defense case, I'm always looking at things from a prosecution standpoint. You know, I started off my career as a prosecutor, so I'm always thinking, okay, how is the prosecutor going to attack this case? If I were a prosecutor, what would I be focusing on in order to discredit witnesses or to prove that this person wasn't in compliance with California law? So I think that's one of the things I bring to the table being a former prosecutor is that I really have an advantage that I can look at these cases from a prosecution standpoint and really analyze how they're going to attack the case, and then I can structure the defense accordingly.
Yeah, I would think that would be a great perspective to have. I want to go back to the DUI thing for just a second here because, you know, again, it's something that's been a issue up in Washington State. Also, Colorado, I understand Montana's looking at a per se provision here as well. And I'm just wondering, in your experience in San Diego County, are they relying mostly on the urine metabolite types of tests, or do they go as far as getting the blood tests?
Well, here in California, if they suspect you're under the influence of marijuana or another drug, you have the option between a urine or a blood test. And depending on what the subject chooses, they proceed accordingly.
So I'm sorry to interrupt, Mike. That's the person who's being tested gets to decide?
The person who's being tested, generally, if you get pulled over and you're suspected of a DUI, you get the choice between a blood test or a breath test, and that's for an alcohol-related DUI. However, if it is a drug-related, then they give you the choice between alcohol or urine.
Or blood or urine?
I'm sorry, blood or urine.
Wow. Okay. So would we advise people then in California, you know, choose blood?
You know, generally, I advise to choose urine tests, and that's only because there aren't as many studies on urine tests and the level of marijuana metabolites in urine as it relates to whether someone's under the influence. I think a lot of studies out there, when you're looking at per se limits, those studies are concerning blood, at least the studies that I've read. So
yeah.
I would generally advise my clients to go with urine just because it's not as clear on what levels of marijuana can cause impairment. But they're also, besides the blood test or the urine test, they're looking at, okay, did this person have marijuana in the vehicle? Did they have a half-smoked joint? Did they have a pipe with residue in it? Did it smell like burnt marijuana in the vehicle or on the person or on their breath or their clothes? Did the person, you know, there's field sobriety tests. There's drug recognition expert. Did the person display any of those signs or symptoms that would indicate that they were under the influence of marijuana? And then they also look at the driving. You know, there's big difference if someone's pulled over for talking on their cell phone or for having a burnout taillight as opposed to someone who's swerving all over the road.
Right. This was something that I tried to address as well in the run-up to the election in Washington State was that, you know, passing a per se DUID doesn't change the procedure at the cop level, does it?
No, it doesn't at all.
Yeah. So, you know, if you've been driving around and, you know, you had a burnout taillight now and they pulled you over and they smelled weed on you and saw a half joint in your ashtray, you're going to get, you know, a DUI charge whether they pass a DUID law or not.
Correct. And in California, you're not required to actually do the field sobriety test. So I advise clients, it's better to just not do the test because the cops are going to be looking for anything possible, even the smallest things that they're going to put in their report to try to establish that you were under the influence. Whereas all of the things that you did properly that would show that you weren't under the influence, they usually fail to mention those in the report.
Yeah, that kind of matches what you were just saying about, you know, whether you should take the blood or the urine. I was kind of thinking that if you give them the blood, well, you might be giving them evidence that shows something they could show a scientific study for. You give them the urine, anything they say is pretty much BS because we know there's really nothing that links urine to impairment. So in this case, you know, with the field sobriety test, kind of the same idea. Don't give them evidence that they're just going to use to prove you're guilty.
Yeah, if you get pulled over for talking on the cell phone and you don't do any field sobriety tests and all they have is a certain level of marijuana in your blood or urine, okay, this person consumed marijuana at some point within the last so many hours, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they were under the influence and that they couldn't operate their vehicle with the caution and care of an ordinary sober person acting under similar circumstances. And that's really the test for a DUI, a drug-related DUI in California.
Yeah, that's good advice right there, folks. And you know, it's always good advice to not having any burning marijuana in your car or let them see that you've got marijuana on you. Don't give the police any more evidence than they've already got. And check your state laws. I mean, it is different in different states, right? I mean, in some states you have to take the roadside sobriety test. Is that true?
Yeah, in some states they would have laws that would require you to take field sobriety tests. So you definitely want to check your particular laws in whatever state it is that you're living in or traveling through, and make sure that those laws are the same as what I was just mentioning. Because you definitely don't want to be in a situation where you're required to perform some type of test and then you fail to do so, and you have to accept the consequences of that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Michael Sindrich from Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, a speaker going out there and telling people the truth about the war on drugs. Before we let you go, any last words for our audience?
I believe in the, and we all believe in the medical marijuana movement, but I think it's extremely important to, really just focus on full-on legalization as Colorado and Washington have done. And the Medical Association, the doctors in California have all agreed that until marijuana is legalized for recreational purposes, we really won't understand all of the benefits of it. So I think, although the medical fight is extremely important, I think we really need to focus on full-on legalization. Contact your policymakers, your politicians, and help us with the fight.
All right. Thank you, Michael Sindrich, Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. You can find him at leap.cc or copssaylegalizeddrugs.com. Thanks for joining us here on 420 Radio.
Thanks a lot, Russ.
All right. When we come back, we've got an amazing story of medical marijuana, children, and autism. You don't want to miss it. Stick around.
We'll be right back after these messages from our 420-friendly sponsors. Support these advertisers because their ad money goes straight to the Russ Belville Show. You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation. NARML stands for Responsible Adult Cannabis Use. If cannabis use is causing problems in your life, consider taking a break or seeking medical assistance. Consider ceasing cannabis use if you have a family history of mental illness. Don't drive or operate heavy machinery while impaired by cannabis use. Cannabis use is not without risks, even though the risks may be far less than those posed.
You want answers?
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
You want answers?
You have offended my family?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
And you have offended a Shaolin temple.
You can't handle the truth!
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Radical rant.
Well, today, folks, for the Radical Rant, I've got to turn things over to a video that I saw on my local TV news just the other day. It was pretty amazing. I'll switch right over to here. It's KPTV Fox 12 News is the channel, and it's a story of a local father who is using medical marijuana for his child. Let's turn over to that video.
A controversial treatment to manage their son's autism rage.
They've turned to medical marijuana to help treat his behavior. KPTV's Nicole Dahl has this Only on 12 investigation, but we do want to warn you, some of the home video you're about to see, which this family took of their son, may be difficult to watch.
It's difficult to watch this video of an Oregon child hurting himself in a fit of rage. 11-year-old Alex Eccles is severely autistic, his self-destructive behavior brought on by tuberous sclerosis, a genetic disorder that affects about 50,000 people in the U.S. It causes growths in organs, in Alex's case, primarily in the brain. Those growths can lead to seizures and autism. Alex can't communicate with words, making it difficult to understand what's troubling him.
Indescribable. It was horrifying. He was able to just be acting normal and all of a sudden just run himself to a wall.
His parents have turned to a controversial treatment, medical marijuana, to manage Alex's behavior.
Well, when you've got no other options, are you honestly going to say no?
It wasn't always this way, though.
He was actually going to be Jake for the longest time, and when he was born, we saw him and said, that's not Jake, that's Alex.
The day Alex was born, Jeremy and Karen Eccles were full of hope, until 6 weeks later, when their baby had his first seizure.
We didn't know he was going to be autistic at that time. I think he was three the first time he started hurting himself, though.
By the time Alex was five, it was intense, self-directed rage. Alex headbutted anything he could, bruising his forehead so badly, his father says the blood would drain until Alex's entire face was black and blue. They got him a helmet, swaddled him like a newborn, tried mood-altering drugs. But Alex's daily violent behavior became the Eugene family's new normal. When he was eight, they made the heartbreaking decision to move Alex into a state-funded group home.
It was like we were throwing him away. Like we were just giving him to somebody else and saying, sorry, buddy, you know, you're not part of the family anymore. It was pretty rough.
But was there a way to help him, to bring back this smiling boy? Alex's parents looked into Oregon's medical marijuana program, and a doctor approved Alex. Alex is now one of about 50 Oregon children with a card like this. While autism is not a qualifying medical condition like cancer or severe pain, in Alex's case, the seizures are. And after a few months of treatment, the Eccles say they saw a dramatic improvement.
He went from hitting himself, bloodying his face, within an hour, hour and a half, he would be playing with toys, using his hands, something that at that time was almost unheard of.
It's an extremely rare occurrence for Alex.
Alex's group home won't give him the marijuana, so about three times a week, his parents give him a liquid form of the drug. Oregon law does not require a doctor to monitor a child's medical marijuana use. In fact, Alex's neurologist at Dornbecker Children's Hospital didn't know about the alternative treatment until we told him.
Did it surprise you that they were trying something like
this? No, I don't think so at all. I certainly am very much with them in my desire to help Alex. All of us want to help Alex.
Alex's doctor didn't speak directly about the controversy of using medical marijuana on children, but the American Academy of Pediatrics is against it. A doctor representing that group tells me that marijuana is toxic to children's developing brains, and there isn't enough known about the drug's long-term effects.
For us, the long-term side effects that are unknown for something that can't kill him are a lot better than the long-term side effects of him beating himself bloody.
The Eccles also say they're not advocating the use of medical marijuana for all autistic children, but they say walk a mile in their shoes, and the treatment might not seem so extreme.
Yeah. Look at your little sister.
Alex's parents say that they videotaped his episodes to prove that his injuries were self-inflicted. They've created a website about Alex's journey that includes a blog with updates, and we have a link to that on our website, kptv.com.
All right, so I hope that video touched you the way it touched me last night when I saw it, because while I am so, so grateful that Jeremy Eccles lives in the state of Oregon and we have a medical marijuana program and he can get that medicine for his child, I am still outraged. The first thing I'm outraged about is the framing in the media that this is an extreme treatment. We had to go to this so controversial. We had to go to this terrible extreme. And even as the father is expressing moving to medical marijuana for his child, he's expressing it in terms like, Well, if it was your child, you'd have no other choice. You'd do anything. As if this needs to be the medicine of last resort. In further research on this story, I found out, you know, how many pharmaceutical medications that they tried on Alex, that they tried in vain to try to help this poor kid from beating himself bloody on a daily basis. The FDA approved safe, effective medications he was giving would not work. And to think how long they went trying every possible option and letting their child suffer like that every day. They were trying these options and who knows what other types of side effects, and talk about toxic to the developing child's brain. Some of these pharmaceuticals haven't been tested on children. That's right. It's very hard to get testing specifically on children through the FDA. There's a lot of ethical concerns that are involved there. A lot of the medicines that are used regularly on children have never been tested on them. A lot of these are being used in off-label ways as well. That's a whole subject for a whole nother rant. So how many drugs and how many toxic pharmaceuticals did this kid have to go through before the parents finally, at the end of their rope, and only after seeing the brave Miko Hester Perez, who had given medical marijuana for her son Joey? She was a guest on our show before she had made the mainstream media, before she was on Good Morning America and so forth, talking about how much it helped her child. Only after seeing her and she having to go through all this, the slings and arrows and criticisms and everything she's been through, only after seeing her speak out so bravely did he even consider that, oh, I'm in a state where we could try this option for my son, this non-toxic option for my son. And I'm still outraged by the fact that, considering what the legislature has done, it cost him $200 to register for his son, probably another $50 to register somebody to grow. That we raised the price of that. Because I'm sure this father, who's got not just his son with autism, but other kids, I think three or four, father of four, isn't he? I'm sure he's got money to burn after going through all these specialists and treatments and tests that I'm sure cost an arm and a leg and have probably, well, I don't know, maybe the Obamacare helped not have a limit on that stuff anymore. Still, I'll bet $250 would help him a lot right now. But I'm mostly enraged about Project Sam and this smarmy, condescending, patriarchal view of people like Jeremy Eccles using marijuana to treat their child. Now they'll tell you, oh no, we have compassion, we want to help, we want to help. But when it gets right down to it, and you look right at their page, which I'm going to do right now at learnaboutsam.com, learnaboutsam.com, they address these kind of things. We've got legal reform, their own words, production, distribution, dealing, and sale of marijuana. We seek fair and proportionate penalties for these crimes, and which means you have to be arrested, right? Crimes you get arrested for, and recommends they remain misdemeanors or felonies based on the amounts possessed. So all those people who grew the marijuana, who then harvested the marijuana and processed the marijuana and extracted it to make that honey oil or whatever that tincture was that they got for that kid. All the people who put it together and brought it over for him, they should be in prison, according to Project Sam. They should be fairly and proportionately penalized for those crimes of harvesting and preparing and trafficking and maybe even selling that marijuana to help that little autistic boy. And the father, Jeremy, why, if he's driving around somewhere, he should be subject to a civil offense, subject to a mandatory health screening and marijuana education program as appropriate, maybe even a referral to treatment or social support services, and maybe even monitored for 6 to 12 months in a probation program designed to prevent further drug use. Yeah. See, advocating for a kinder, gentler drug war still means you're advocating for a drug war. Now, Project Sam will say, no, 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 no. We're all for the medical utility of cannabis. In fact, they call for the rapid expansion of research an emergency program so seriously ill patients can obtain non-smoked components of marijuana before final FDA approval. You mean like the non-smoked components of marijuana that that child is using successfully to treat autism? I didn't see any smoking going on there. Look non-smoked to me. Oh, but I'm sorry. The FDA hasn't approved it yet. That child will just have to go the next month, 2, 3, 10, 20, 3, 4 years that it takes the FDA to get around to allowing researchers to do the research and the studies and make sure it's all safe and effective. We wouldn't want any long-term side effects for this child. My God, if he smokes marijuana this young, he could have an 8-point drop in IQ. Yeah, that's what Project Sam is all about, people. That smoked marijuana is not medicine doesn't mean we should not pursue cannabis-based medicines in the form of pills, mouth sprays, injections, patches, and other acceptable routes of administration. And until we can make those, let that kid take pills. That's really what it comes down to here. I am not going to stop engaging Kevin Sabet. I am not going to stop engaging Patrick Kennedy. I am not going to stop engaging David Frum and anyone else who would put Jeremy Eccles in a cage and all the people who are supplying and growing the marijuana that help Alex Eccles. You want to jail those people. You want to incarcerate those people because you don't believe marijuana is medical enough. It hasn't gone through the FDA approval process yet. It has still a Schedule I drug. It's deadly dangerous. Why, if we were to relent and allow that kid to use a cannabis tincture, some teenager might smoke a joint like they are now. I just can't get over how many emotions this video stirs up in me. Because you see this kid, this desperate father, and you see this kid bloodied up and beaten from himself, having to wear a helmet and a blanket is still not enough. He's scabbed and bloody, and then you see a smiling, happy, playful kid after a cannabis tincture. And there's a sense, there's a part of me that, you know, I'm able to kind of put my consciousness in places, you know, thanks to the use of certain herbal substances. And I can try to imagine parallel universes. I can try and imagine a world, and maybe you can go there with me. Imagine a world where there's no pot, there's no marijuana, there's no Cheech and Chong. I don't mean they're dead. I just mean it wasn't a phenomenon. There's no pot culture. There's no wacky weed. That doesn't exist. Imagine nobody's ever heard of marijuana. Nobody's ever seen the plant. Instead of having 5,000 years of history with it from the central European mountains and such, we don't have that history. Imagine that doesn't exist. And scientists just went to some isolated tropical island that hasn't seen the hand of mankind ever. And they find a tribe there cultivating cannabis and using it as medicine. And one of these enterprising doctors extracts some of it and tries it on an autistic kid like this one. What do you think the reaction of the world would be when the news story came out? When they show this kid beating himself bloody and then, wow, this amazing, you know, ginger fruit from the tropical isle, and we gave him a little tincture of it and it's a remarkable change. What do you think the reaction would be? Do you think there'd be a controversy about this? Do you think there would be people up in arms? Oh my God, we don't know the long-term side effects of what we, if we give this to children. Do you think there'd be any of that kind of reaction? Or do you think we would be mobilizing and marshaling every force in the capitalist empire there is to make sure every person could get this plant if they needed it? That every person that had a child in this sort of situation could get as much of this as they need? What kind of Christian nation would deny a child the plant that God made for him? And I'm not even Christian. Wow. That's all the time we got for hour one and about all the voice I got. So We're going to take it into hour two, Toker Talk Radio, where you can be part of the voice of the Marijuana Nation. Phone number is 971-533-7111. Check out RadicalRust.com for all my rants in written form. You can check out 420radio.org for the show pages. Brian Red's here. I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you in hour two. And until next time, take care of each other, Tokers. We love you.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com. Take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you